Hi, listeners. I'm your host, Rebecca Kelly, and welcome back to The Station, a fiction podcast about a girl named Ida Shepherd, who's all alone on board an old space station called the Delta. Now, Ida just made contact for the very first time with someone on the surface, a NASA engineer named Ale. In this episode, we'll read the first transcript of her conversation with Ale and learn a little bit about how the conversation affected both Ale and Ida. Are you ready? Let's get to it. Here are chapters 24 and 25 of The Station. God help us, Jade said, her mouth hanging open. In her hand, she held the transcript from Ale's conversation with the girl on the Delta, which took place just 30 minutes prior. Yeah, no kidding, Ale said. He paced slowly, one foot at a time, replaying the conversation in his head, watching the floor as if it might drop away from underneath him at any moment. He'd had only about 8 minutes to talk to Ida before the Delta's orbit took it out of contact, but it qualified as one of the most bizarre things he'd ever done. What she had told him in those few minutes made him shudder, even now as he replayed it in his mind. The transcript Jade held in her hands read as follows. Ale, where are you, Ida? Ida, I am on the station. Ale, do you mean the Delta space station? Ida, yes, that's the one. Ale, excuse me for being unprepared, but how is that possible? Ida, well, I guess I don't understand the question. I mean, I'm here, so it's definitely possible. Ale, how did you get there? Ida, I have always been here. I was born here. Ale, how old are you? Ida, I just had my 18th birthday. My mother was Millicent Shepherd, but I called her New. Ale, is your mother with you now? Ida, no, she isn't. Ale, oh, okay, what happened to her? Ida, I would prefer not to talk about my mother right now. Ale, okay, I guess that's a question for another time. Do you operate the Delta? Ida, yes. Ale, so you are the one doing the orbital maneuvers to keep it in orbit? Ida, yes, but there's a problem. A few days ago, I discovered that the engine is no longer functioning. Ale, wait, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? You still have power up there, right? Ida, yes, there's power. The nuclear reactor is still working, but there was a problem with the last orbital maneuver I did about a month ago. It caused a short in the engine wiring and fried most of the cabling between the reactor and the engine. As far as I can tell, it's useless. I sent Nix out there to see if he could fix it. Ale. Wait, who is Nix? Ida. Nix is the station robot. He performs the maintenance outside of the station. He went out there to try and fix it, but this problem is too big for him. Ale. Jeez, that's not good. Ida. No, it's not, and from my calculations, I have maybe 6 months tops before the orbit becomes unstable. Ale, I assure you, we are going to do everything in our power to help you, okay? Do you understand? Ida, I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm stunned to be speaking to you, Alexandros. It's been so long since I spoke to anyone. Ale, please call me Ale. That's what my friends call me. Ida. Okay. Ale. As he paced the floor in Jade's office, Ale was deep in thought, replaying the sound of Ida's voice over the crackling radio. It was strange because her voice didn't sound excited or happy or hysterical like he imagined he might be after speaking to someone for the first time in years. No, her voice was calm, but more than that, it was plump with relief, the kind of relief you feel when you've narrowly avoided a car accident. Ali couldn't pinpoint it, but something drew him closer to the microphone during their brief conversation, almost like an invisible string reaching from his office chair to Ida's space station had suddenly become connected. The longer they spoke to each other, the tighter the string pulled, drawing him closer to the microphone. It was a little bit unnerving to him. He'd never felt anything like it before. Something else about her voice fascinated him during their conversation. Her voice was beautiful. Even over the static of the radio, its bell tones pinged inside his mind, delicate and delicious. Ale realized after only a few minutes on the radio with her, he would do anything to save Ida. As their radio signal had faded, Ale told Ida to come back to the radio during the next revolution, where he would give her more instructions for how to train her radio antenna to the location of the new satellites. Then they could have uninterrupted radio contact. When Ida heard this, her beautiful voice rose with excitement and longing. Ale had been so overwhelmed by the conversation, he was almost brought to tears. Before the radio signal spit and sputtered and finally relinquished its grip, dropping the radio back into the dull thud of static. Jade watched Ale closely as he paced the room in front of her. She could tell he was rattled by this development, and the idea of it surprised her. Ale always seemed so confident and relaxed, flashing that big, handsome smile around. Even men found comfort in Ale's presence. He was one of those people who knew how to interact with others and put them at ease, no matter the circumstance. But the man that paced in front of her now was worried and frazzled. Nothing like the confident guy who could give you a wink and a nod and assure you he had you covered. "Okay," Jade said, waving her finger at the chair in front of her. Ale snapped back to the present and obeyed her command to sit. He linked his fingers together in his lap and waited for her to continue. "Let's take a rational look at the situation," she said. "When does the station orbit back around?" "It'll be in radio contact in about 86 minutes," Ale said, glancing at his watch. "Good. I want to talk to her this time," Jade said, pulling up the holoscreen and jotting down some notes. "Then I'm going to have to bring this up to administration." "Who?" he asked. "Who do you think?" "Patrick," she said, giving him a look which implied he should have known better. John Patrick was the current NASA administrator, as his father had been before the war broke out. Patrick was a fierce guy, intimidating to almost everyone except Jade. She was able to finesse her way around his monster ego with the delicate footing of a ballet dancer. "We need to get a better communication system up with her. The ground network is shot. We'll need to rely on the new satellites. Let's get one of the programmers working on it, preferably someone who already knows. Maybe that Lena person," Jade said. "Gina," Ale corrected. "Gina Lau. She's the one who found the signal." "Yeah, whatever. Let's talk to her. I still want to keep this one to ourselves, and if she already knows about it, then keep her on a limited knowledge basis. I want 24-hour ground contact with this Ida person by morning. I mean it, Ale. Keep this one close. This Lena person needs to know as few details as possible. Make her understand." "It's Gina," he corrected again. Jade rolled her eyes. "She could be Joan of Arc for all I care. Just make sure she knows. I mean, how is it possible that a government as big as ours could lose an entire space station? We need to figure out answers to that question before the public finds out about this." "Got it," Ale said, nodding. "I'd also like permission to start working on the rescue. I might have to pull some people in. I'm sure physiology will want to crack at this one. I mean, someone who's been in space her entire life. They'll salivate at the opportunity to learn from her." He paused a moment before adding, "Jade, her orbit is decaying. We don't even have a functioning space vehicle. Hell, there hasn't been a human in space, well, one that we've known of, for over 18 years. I need to get started now. Jade stood from her desk and slung her black Chanel bag over her shoulder, saying, "Yes, get to work on it. I'll be down at your desk in 84 minutes to talk to her. Have it ready." "Yes, ma'am," he said. Gina Lau looked at the information on the holoscreen in front of her. Stunned didn't really capture the expression on her face. It was more like the disbelief of a deer just before making contact with the headlights. She looked up at Ale and said, "You can't be serious." "Trust me, Gina, it's not a joke. This project has now been upgraded to the highest priority level. Jade wants these satellites pointing at the Delta immediately." He moved his fingers over Gina's screen several times and pulled up a long list of coordinates. "These are the orbital coordinates I've plotted so far. It shouldn't be too difficult to program them to track this and relay back a full-strength radio signal." "Wait, just wait," Gina said. "You mean to tell me that the Delta is still up there in orbit after 18 years? And the person running it is a girl who was born there. And after all these years, her ion engine has malfunctioned and the station will deorbit within a few months. And we're just finding out about this now? That's what I'm telling you," he said. "Jeez." Gina fell back in her chair and let out a long breath of air. Then, as any good engineer on a mission would do, she sat up, turned her attention to her holoscreen, and began pulling up the satellite interfaces. "Well, I better get started then." Ale smiled and said, "Good, and you'll keep this one to yourself. It was a statement, not a question." "Got it," she said, without looking away from her screen. She would spend the next 6 hours at her console, working on the project of restoring full-time communication back to the Delta. I've lived a fairly uneventful life. So to say that today is the best day of all the days I've had isn't really saying much. I spoke to another human being today for the first time in 3 years. I should be excited. It's weird because I'm not acting excited. I mean, in the conventional sense. When I watch movies where people get excited about something or another, they express their excitement in relatively common ways. They jump for joy, or they get all red in the face, or they slap themselves as if they can't believe their own good luck. Someone who's excited might laugh or scream or let loose a whole slew of oohs and ahs and OMGs. I didn't do any of that. Excitement just isn't something I'm used to. When Ali's voice came through that old radio, my mind instantly calmed. One moment I was trying to get the radio set up, frantic and anxious and hanging on for dear life, and the next moment his voice boomed out of the little box and all was well. I felt stable and safe, and I was able to catch my breath again. It literally happened that fast. And his voice, it was like nothing I'd ever heard. Even through the crackling radio, there was something special about it. It was beautiful. Not beautiful like bells chiming or violins playing. His voice wasn't smooth or fine or delicate. It was beautiful in a rough sort of way. In a male sort of way. Maybe it was just the radio, but his voice sounded to me like the lyrical equivalent of eating a steak. I've never eaten a steak, but it seems to be the sort of food men really like. That's what his voice reminded me of, a steak. All charred and buttery and full of flavor. I picture him in my mind, standing on a porch in front of a big grill like I've seen in movies. He's smiling and flipping steaks. I have no idea what he looks like, of course, but in my steak fantasy, I imagine he's tall, with dark eyes and dark hair and dark skin. I picture myself standing on the porch with him, drawing in the scent of rosemary and crackling coals. My mind conjures up what the coolness of the breeze might feel like coming off the huge trees surrounding the porch, and all around us is lush greenery. I realize that for the first time in my life, I am actively imagining myself standing on the surface. I have never really thought of myself as part of that world before. It's a place that exists, but not for me. Not until now, until I heard his voice. Our conversation was short because of the station's orbit, but Ale promised me he would be there, waiting for me with further instructions when the station revolves around again. I cannot wait to hear his voice again. Now, finally, I'm not the only person in the whole universe who knows my engine is blown. I'm also not the only one responsible to fix it. I can allow myself to think about getting rescued. It's exciting and terrifying. Ale mentioned that since the war, there has been no manned spaceflight, which means they will have to build something to come up and get me. But that's okay. If the experts at NASA can troubleshoot my engine, then there's hope to get it fixed and continue to orbit until they can come up to rescue me. The radio crackles. I am waiting. As the seconds tick away, I get more nervous. Did I dream that conversation? Is Ale a figment of my stressed out, overworked mind? Ida, are you there? His voice breaks through the static of the radio, and my body and mind both melt with relief. Yes, I'm here, Ale, I say in the receiver. Ah, you remember my name, he says. Of course I remember your name, I say, a little too eagerly, and my face flushes with heat. Well, that's good, because we're going to be talking a lot, he says. I nod my head and purse my lips to show that I'm grateful for this. Then I blush and roll my eyes at myself, knowing that he can't even see me. He continues. Listen, I want to go over a few programming commands with you so your computers can locate the communication satellites. That way we won't have to rely on these ancient radios to communicate. But first, I've got someone else here who wants to talk to you. I can feel panic rising up into my throat. Someone else? I can't talk to someone else yet. I'm having a difficult enough time dealing with just the one person. I mutter into the radio, I don't know if I want to talk to anyone else yet. There is silence on the other end. I realize this comment may have sounded a little weird, so I say, it's just that, well, I've never talked to anyone else before. I'm nervous. There is a pause. I hope I've explained well enough to keep me from sounding like a total lunatic. It's okay, Ida, he says. It must be really difficult being alone up there. I promise I'm going to try and be your primary contact. But from time to time, you'll have to talk to other people. But trust me, I don't care much for talking to other people either. He laughs and continues. We're going to bring in all the experts we can to get you out of there. And as much as I like to think it, I'm not an expert on everything. So you'll have to listen to some other people from time to time. Is that okay? Okay, yes, I understand. I like how he asked my permission to continue, and I do feel strangely more at ease now that he's explained it in such a casual way. Good, he says, sounding satisfied. Now, I'm going to put you on with Jade. She's one of the directors here at NASA. She and I work on the same team, and we will handle your rescue mission. Hold on one second, and I'll have Jade come on and speak with you. There is a pause, followed by the radio crackle as he has let the handset go for a second. My heart immediately picks up. Why am I so nervous? I just can't believe the fact that I'm actually speaking with people. Maybe I really have dreamed all this up in my head. Have I finally lost my mind? The radio cracks to life again. Hello, Ida. My name is Jade. It's a pleasure to get to speak with you. You've caused quite a buzz around here since Ale came to us with this news, she says. I promise one thing, Ida. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything for you. It's going to be a difficult haul figuring out how to fix your station and how to get you home. But we're going to do it. Do you hear me loud and clear? How interesting. She used the word home to describe the surface. like I've been there before and I'm taking a long vacation here in space. But I do like her style. Her voice is strong and dark, like Ale's, and I like how confident she sounds. Ale will be the leader of this project, she says. Does that sound good to you? Of course, I say. Good. Now, I know we're short on time, so I'll get Ale back on here to give you instructions about setting up the satellite communications. But before I go, I just want to say one more thing. You're a very brave girl, and I appreciate bravery. I'm going to make damn sure we get you back home. Got it? Yes, ma'am. I understand, I say. The radio breaks as she hands the receiver back to Ale, who comes on again and says, All right, now that we've commenced with the pleasantries, let's get down to business. For the next few minutes, he gives me a list of instructions on how to find the satellites with my computer tracking program and then set up the broadcast channel. They're relatively simple steps, but he feeds them to me as if I have never seen a computer in my life. I'll have to make sure he knows that I've been on this station for a while now and I'm capable of the basics, but I suppose he's just being safe. The communication satellites were supposed to go through a period of testing and troubleshooting, but Ali says they've pushed their engineers into high gear for my sake and got them up and running at full power 3 weeks early. Once I update my system, I won't have a single minute of lost communication going forward. And just like that, I am not alone anymore. Thanks for listening, sci-fi fans. In the next episode, we'll meet a new character to our story and learn how the higher-ups at NASA take this news about the girl on the abandoned space station. It might surprise you. See you then. Bye.